Well, happy new year. Welcome to the first Radio Free Professional Wrestling of 2024. It is I, Sean, and along with my tag team partner, Ashley, and we're partying like it's 1999. Ashley, happy new year's. How you doing?
Happy new year, Sean. I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. I do believe we have a lot to talk about on the very first day of 2024, and it may not be all positive for one AEW.
Yeah, kind of a strange pay-per-view this weekend.
True. So we're going to skip the traditional Control Center 76 questions. We're going straight to a review of AEW's last pay-per-view of 2023. We had about 36 hours to sit on this and think about it, Ashley. And we're going to go through the matches, and we'll hit the Chris Jericho controversy during that match, and we'll give our thoughts about that. But going into this pay-per-view, Ashley, were you thinking this is going to be a good show, mediocre show, or a bad show?
Honestly, the card was not built up to like expectations, and you know, there was some injuries and stuff that caused some switches and some last minute changes to the card. But usually when AEW's back is against the wall and we have a less than stellar looking card, they usually manage to kind of pull it out of the bag. But this one, I feel like couldn't overcome some of the underlying controversies that were going on beforehand that were simply not addressed in a way that I think most people would have found appropriate. And then some kind of strange booking calls, I would say, during the card.
Let's go ahead and we'll talk about 0 hour first. The very first match we saw of the evening was Will Nightingale versus Chris Statlander. And I've seen a lot of people talk about how the finish was botched. I got to watch this match this morning. It's a fine match, and yes, the finish was a little bit messy, but still, I left that match feeling like those two ladies are still two of the best wrestlers in AEW's women's division. What do you think about the first match?
Honestly, I feel the same way. I thought it was a very good match up until that kind of like string of bad luck there at the end with the like the powerbomb botch and everything. But I mean, still, again, you're right. These are two of the best women in AEW's women's division, and they were going pretty hard for about 10 minutes beforehand. And again, unfortunate, but I can see them both coming back and bouncing back from that pretty easily.
Me as well. I thought it was a fine opener, and it kept the crowd warmed up. And honestly, I watched the 0 hour the morning after I watched AEW Worlds. And so I was coming with it, already seeing the main pay-per-view. But honestly, looking at it with the crowd seemed like they were happy for this first match. And they definitely loved the second match, which was the 20-man Battle Royal. And this was a fun Battle Royal, actually.
Yeah, I think the Battle Royals for AEW can be a little hit and miss. But I think, like you said, overall, pretty fun one. Pretty tight. I didn't see any... Sometimes you see some sloppy spots in any Battle Royal with, you know, people just knowing there's so much going on. But seemed like everybody was in. I would honestly love to see, I think I tweeted this out the other night, that I would love to see them make this like an annual tradition and name it after Brody Lee and have like a memorial tournament for the TNT title every year in honor of Brody Lee.
Yes, I mean, they did say this was, the winner would receive a TNT title shot whenever they choose to have it. And that's a little bit of foreshadowing coming on to this pay-per-view, but I agree with you. I feel like AEW should carry this tradition on, and they should name it after Brody.
Yeah, I think it's a great way to honor Brody Lee and kind of a great way to get somebody who maybe you want to push, like, you know, every year kind of into the picture and get somebody new into there. I feel like with Killswitch / Luchasaurus coming into it, the choice was kind of obvious with the match coming later for the night.
Yes, it is an obvious choice of who would have won this match, but how they got to it was kind of interesting because if you saw the start of this match, everybody decided, hey, we got the Murder Hawk and we got Killswitch. There's two people we need to take care of for a minute. So they barely these guys underneath tables. You saw Serpentino use a chair and the smash these tables, trying to put these guys out of commission for a bit. Then the other 18 guys got into the ring and they started eliminating each other. Later on, we saw the Murder Hawk and Killswitch get in there, and they basically went on a elimination spree.
Yeah, it's nice to see Murder Hawk get on the card again. Somebody who AEW seems to forget they have on their roster, and is very good and would make quite the great monster heel.
You know, he might be one of the most misused, underappreciated professional wrestlers in that company.
I agree. I've loved Lance Archer, and I would love to see him be in something like the TNT title picture.
So we get down to our final four. Our final four are Lance Archer, Killswitch, Danhausen, and Trent Beretta. Now, Trent and Danhausen smartly eliminated the Murder Hawk together. And we get the moment where, hey, it's for everybody. Let's have a hug. Then Trent decides, this is the moment when I want to toss one of my friends out before we eliminated the other giant. And I, for one, was happy to see Trent Beretta fail to get this title shot.
Yeah, you gotta get rid of the other guy first, Trent. Honestly, I'm glad to see Trent make it to the end. I think Trent is a very good singles performer. And like you said, just you got to team up with your partner first. Then you throw him over the top rope.
Yeah, I mean, like, they got half the equation right. Then it was a nice little story. And the crowd did boo Trent Beretta toss out Danhausen because everybody loves the also nice but evil Danhausen.
True. Definitely a crowd favorite.
So we move on from that match to the last match on 0 Hour. It's for the FTW title. It's Hook versus Wheeler Yuta. And has anybody seen Wheeler Yuta since he kind of tapped out from Hook? I'm kind of worried about him now.
Yeah, pretty brutal choke out there with a piece of a hockey stick that Hook used after he broke it over Yuta's back.
You know, this was a fine match. I mean, Yuta is probably another person who's benefited from the fact that he's in dispatching the Blackpool Combat Club and he's progressed through the year. His promos are still coming along, and the promo he cut here in this match was not the greatest. It was the atypical generic heel promo. I hate the city. I hate your sports team. I'm so much better. And I was happy that the music for Hook cut him off, and we got this match started. It was a fine match, so everything on 0 Hour is well worth a watch, and this crowd was happy to go into the main pay-per-view. And here we go. First match up. It's a 8-man tag match. It's the non-winners of the Continental Tournament facing off against each other.
We started off with such promise here.
And this was a fine 8-man tag match. And here we go. Our tag team consisted of Claudio Castagnoli, Brian Danielson, Daniel Garcia, and Mark Briscoe versus Brody King, Jay White, Roosh, and Jay Lethal. This should have been like the main event of this, or the semi-main event of this show. This match over-delivered.
Truly. I mean, the names in it, how could it not have? You look at these teams. It's insane.
I was just happy that Garcia was the one that you decided to give the win to, and this is going to push him off into 2024, hopefully on a path towards maybe the TNT or international title, I hope.
Yeah, kind of a great kind of a continuation of the story of him kind of taking a lot of losses during this World Continental Classic, being the one to lead the team with, especially of all people, Brian Danielson to victory.
I just love the fact that you have Garcia come down to the ring. He's about ready to dance, and here comes American Dragon's music, and he just walks by him. It's like, you're the student, I'm the mentor, follow me.
Yep.
So, yeah, I agree with you. It's a fine match. Good opener for this pay-per-view. And we move on to the next match. And this match has a little bit more interest now since we know that it's probably Andrade El Hilo's last match with the company. If you watch the media scrum, Tony Khan did confirm that he had talked with Andrade and was unable to come to a new contract. So at the time you guys are listening to this podcast, Andrade's a free agent. So he may be on Monday Night Raw tonight? Question mark?
I could definitely see him returning. I think if given the chance, he would go back to work with his wife. I think it kind of leaves a strange position because a lot of people kind of foresaw like maybe Ric Flair and stuff still being involved in AEW, like possibly something there, but now it just leaves him there. I don't know where that leaves any of that. But like all the best to Andrade. He killed it in the Continental Classic and had a great match with Miro here to cap off his time here.
Exactly. I was happy they didn't decide to make this a squash match for Andrade. They gave Andrade a bunch of offense. He gets the figure eight locked in. You think he might get the victory on Miro. Then CJ Perry decides to turn on her client, sweeps his arms. Miro gets out of the figure eight, locks in, game over, and Andrade taps.
Yeah, I mean, believable enough ending. You have like possibly CJ and Miro reuniting now. And, you know, let her manage him and let them be a duo on Collision. And this, you know, I'd love to see that. So let's get that going on TV. all the best to Andrade. Like I said, he killed it during this match, and he killed it in his time in AEW, and he's probably just going to go back to WWE and kill it there now.
Well, I don't want to leave this match without saying I was so happy to see CJ Perry there in person after the week and a half that she had. If you haven't been following her on Instagram or Twitter, she had an infection that got really severe, and she was in the hospital for a few days, and it was touch and go, but all the best to her and Miro going into 2024.
Yeah, exactly. That's a scary infection to have. So I'm glad she seems to be doing better, and hopefully she can continue to heal up, and her and Miro can continue with this new direction on TV.
Exactly, because as you watch the end of this match, it seems like they are bringing them together, which makes perfect sense now since Andrade won't be there in 2024 for AEW. So you kind of got CJ Perry now floating here with not a storyline to go with. And it just makes perfect sense. I feel like they're a pair couple and they should be together. This kind of interesting feud they had going on for a minute. It was interesting, but still, I feel like a lot of fans would have been like, can we not just get them together? Because we know they're a couple.
Yeah. I kind of felt like that should have been more of the conclusion when Miro was like more doubting himself and stuff, but they felt like they were going to try to pull it out and have CJ Perry like maybe grab a few different clients. But with the sudden change with this, maybe they've kind of doubled back here and decided to just pair him up with Miro. But I'm all for it. I want to see, like you said, them be a power couple on Collision or something here. So,
okay. So we're two matches into this card. So far, we're 2 for 2. So up next, it's the AEW women's title match. It's Timeless Toni Storm versus Rio. And I gotta think, Rio may not have been the perfect opponent for Toni Storm in this match. Toni wins this match, and she wins it clean.
Yeah, kind of surprised. I mean, a little assistance from Luther with a couple of spots, but overall, kind of a little surprised to see her get the clean win over Rio, especially because Rio is such a fan favorite.
You know, I was just counting the minutes down until we see Mariah May come down there with the title or something and cost Rio the match. I was looking for them to do something that would give her an excuse for this loss, and they didn't really do it. Now, personally, my thing about this match was Rio is like 50 pounds lighter than Toni Storm, probably. I feel like Rio should be in like a featherweight women's division. If you're going to have Rio stay in AEW, I feel like we should subdivide this women's division into two tiers and have Rio be the champion of a featherweight division and make it kind of like Stardom, where they have like these lighter female wrestlers who go like super fast. And I feel like that might be something they could do in 2024.
Maybe splitting up the division too would be a good way to get a few more like exposure for a few more people.
Yeah, that's a possibility. This is something I was thinking about when I was watching this match. I was going like, I like Rio, but I was telling David, I feel like she may be out of place in this new AEW women division in 2024.
It does seem that way too, because especially with how sporadic her appearances have been, it's tough to find a spot when you're only appearing like once every few months, you know?
Yeah, true. I feel like she has a lot of commitments in Japan and she focuses a lot of attention over there, which is rightly so. I mean, like, wherever you're making the best money, that's what I'd be doing. I just feel like if you're going to keep her a spot in AEW, we need to benefit her appearances. So she seems special when she comes over, because I didn't feel that special within this match with Toni Storm.
That being said, I did like the post-match Mariah May coming down, and I love that we're kind of teasing like this, you know, like Mariah May seeming, I feel like, is going to turn on Toni and eventually go after the title. So I'm all for like this. I love this continuation. And if you did not see Toni Storm in the media scrum, is by far probably the most entertaining thing of the night.
Oh, yes, it was. And by the way, I'll go ahead and I'll steal her bit. Ashley, what's your New Year's resolution for 2024?
Oh, no. Honestly, I would like to watch more like Japanese like promotions that I'm not as familiar with.
Okay, I'm going to say I want to try to take this show to the next level. That's my New Year's resolution for this podcast and me personally. Like, we've been doing this for 3 years. I just feel like I want to make sure we produce the best possible show possible.
That's a good one.
She was like, before I answer any questions from you, tell me your New Year's resolution. And she just put all the interviewers on the spot. And I thought that was kind of funny. Okay, so we're 3 for 3 good matches here. Then we get to the unfortunate replacement of Keith Lee with Dustin Rhodes as he's facing his first Switzerland as Keith Lee was not medically cleared to be in his match against Frozen. This announcement came about an hour before the show started. And apparently, Keith Lee has been dealing with an injury since 2022, and it flared up in the wrong time here.
Yeah, I heard it had kind of re-aggravated during his match with Shane Taylor at the last Ring of Honor pay-per-view. I feel like there may be a little more to this than what we've heard. I don't know how much is supposed to be storyline. I feel like Swerve was a little more angry than kind of necessary. He seemed like very truly angry at the scrum about the replacement and like talking about having his time wasted and stuff like that. So I'm just hoping everything's good. I'm hoping that there's not much more than hopefully Keith Lee just not hopefully being injured, but like just dealing with it and, you know, thankfully taking the time off to heal up.
True. I do, you know, I feel like what Strickland said was probably more in character. I feel like he's projecting this character that he's going towards the titles now, which he should be, because, I mean, he's the hottest thing in AEW right now. Okay, so in this match with Dustin Rhodes, Dustin comes out. Before the match starts, Strickland crushes his ankle with a center block, and I feel like this should have been the end of the match right there, but they go on for another 10 minutes. Dustin disobeys the medical staff. He rolls in the ring like a valiant babyface, and Strickland just takes out all his frustrations on one Dustin Rhodes.
Yeah, this is one of those like weird booking decisions I was kind of mentioning. You have this big spot where Swerve seemingly stomps on the ankle. I mean, from like the second rope down to the floor on a cinder block. I feel like it should have ended after that spot, or at the very least, if Dustin came in, it should have been just kind of a Swerve squash from that point. I get it's Dustin Rhodes, but it's a tough call, and I think it could have been like a very intriguing thing to have him just absolutely run over Dustin Rhodes.
Exactly. I feel like this loss would not hurt Dustin any bit, even if he didn't get any offense in. Because honestly, after that spot, he shouldn't get any offense in.
Yeah. No, that was my feeling too. Especially like I said, to be having him do like some like kind of like big spots where he's jumping around and stuff a few minutes later is kind of insane. Like that spot should have ended the night, or at least ended his ability to stand for the night.
Okay, so this was the first miss of this pay-per-view, and we roll into our second 8-man tag match. Now, this is the 8-man tag match that had Chris Jericho, Sammy Guevara, Sting, and Darby Allin facing off against the heel team of Tatesha, Powerhouse Hobbs, Ricky Starks, and Big Bill. So going into this match, there was a cloud over this match as you watch Chris Jericho walk down to the ring. Everybody's singing Judas. At the end of Judas, there's a loud audible boo. Earlier in the day, there was a report that Chris Jericho may have sexually harassed one Kylie Rae. It was a Nick Houseman report on his podcast. Kylie Rae kind of gave a heart emoji on Twitter where Nick Houseman made a tweet about it. And this hung over this match like a lead balloon. You know what I mean, Ashley?
Yeah, it was absolutely palpable from the minute he came out. And with whatever these allegations are, at the very least, you take him off this pay-per-view. You know, it sucks for some of the other people who kind of just get caught up as like collateral. You know, like whether you trim it down to a 6-man tag match and somebody gets booted off the other side, or even just cut it down to a tag match. Maybe you just cut it down to Ricky and Big Bill versus Sting and Darby or something, you know, just to remove the Don Callis factor from any of it all for right now. I don't know why the call wasn't made to take him off this pay-per-view.
Okay, I went into this pay-per-view without knowing what actually was going on. I'm on vacation as we're recording this podcast, so I was off Twitter until I started hearing the boos, and I went onto Twitter, then I got caught up to speed. And is this another misstep by Tony Khan and supposedly this AEW advisory committee? Like you said, Ashley, the easiest move to make was pull Chris Jericho from this pay-per-view. And we get to the media scrum, and we had a few questions about this, and Tony Khan gave the standard business answer of, I can't answer this. We have a AEW advisory committee. We have a sexual harassment policy. We have an open door policy. And that was his standard line for the media scrum.
Yeah. kind of not what you want to hear. You want to hear at least something a little more proactive. Again, baffled by the decision to at least, at the very least, like just suspend him for now until you, if you're not sure what's going on, just sort out what's going on. Or if you do know what's going on, to figure out what you need to do and just do it. It doesn't matter that he's Chris Jericho. It doesn't matter his stature or what he's done. If he did something wrong, it needs to be dealt with.
You know, they suspended Jack Perry for his altercation with CM Punk, and we haven't seen Jack Perry since July.
Exactly.
I'm like, Tony, why don't you go over to Chris and go like, hey, this is going on today. This is going to affect this pay-per-view. This crowd is going to eat you alive, which it almost did. We're going to take you off this and just let you get your money. As you said, at home, we'll go for an investigation. I'm going to announce that, hey, we're doing an investigation on this issue. You know, it gives you a more proactive Tony Khan, somebody in control of this company. This is just another example that he has no control over his wrestlers.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Jericho has kind of had his foot in his mouth as of lately on social media. And then this story coming out and all of these allegations coming out now, you got to do something. Like I said, like, it's baffling to not take him off the card, to assume that people, especially like AEW's fan base, are very in tune with social media, and a lot of them are like die hard, you know, they're always on talking about it. So you knew at least a portion of your fan base was going to know about these allegations, and it almost hijacked the show midway.
Exactly. So it doesn't really matter about this match, but Ricky Starks gets pinned by Sammy Guevara as they're trying to make Sammy Guevara yet another face run of this guy. And honestly, I felt sorry for everybody else in that ring because this match was playing to a deaf crowd.
Yeah. Again, another baffling decision. And I want to say, I feel like it would have been a little easier to turn Sammy at least a face if they hadn't gone with this weird, nonsensical way of turning him back into a baby face, of like being upset that his baby was in a painting that Don Callis commissioned, which is like just very weak ammo for a baby face run when you have somebody like Don Callis, and it was very easy to have Don Callis boot him out and tell him he wasn't good enough or something, which would have been, Don Callis is an automatic heat magnet, you know, I feel like it would have been like the easier automatic way to go about it. But weird decisions leading into another terrible decision, and then on top of that, you pin Ricky Starks of all people on the team.
Yeah, this didn't do no favors to anybody. Like you said, I feel like they should just made this match go away and just had Tony Khan go like, the media scrum go like, we had to pull this match because of Chris Jericho's allegations. We just made the smart decision of letting him go home. We're going to figure out what's going on, and we'll go from there when we cross that bridge.
Yeah. Either, like I said, either that or, like I said, cut out that factor completely. If you want to keep a match on the card, just cut it down to Big Bill and Ricky Starks versus Darby Allin and Sting for the tag titles or something.
I mean, like, that would give that crowd something to cheer about. I mean, they would love to see Sting and Darby Allin challenge for the AEW tag titles. I mean, that would have been the logical choice.
Right. Instead of trying to push something that, like I said, like, your fan base is too in tune with what's going on social media for you to not be aware of that.
Very true. So up next is the TBS title match. It's Julia Hart versus Abaddon. And thank God this match was on the card, because this crowd finally got something to cheer about, and these two ladies got this show back on the road.
Yeah, it felt like finally some investment from the crowd after kind of a lackluster middle run there that at pay-per-view.
So we see Abaddon and Julia Hart have a good match. Sky Blue comes down, causes a little bit of interference, and Julia Hart gets the victory, and we're continuing the storyline where Julia Hart and Sky Blue are working together, and Abaddon had one hell of a showing, and I hope we see more of her in 2024.
Yeah, it was nice to see her be used beyond Halloween.
It was nice to see her and Julia Hart on a pay-per-view and having two women's matches on the main pay-per-view.
Yeah, and I would say like two like very different style women's matches, along with the third, the match with Willow and Stat, kind of gave you a little bit of everything for the women's.
True. And in the media scrum inside the Julia Hart segment, she was talking about if you ask her at the beginning of the year if she would have been TBS champion at this pay-per-view defending against Abaddon, she would tell you you're crazy. I'm just happy for this evolution in Julia Hart. And now we're getting somebody else to try and push new, who is Abaddon. And I feel like Abaddon's just money waiting to happen.
Yeah, I'd love to see what, like, her kind of get a continued push. Maybe if you even ever tag up with like somebody like Thunder Rosa again, that would be pretty cool.
And Tony Khan did kind of hint that maybe in 2024 there might be AEW women tag team titles? Question mark.
Better stop teasing them.
It needs to happen, Tony. Tony, this needs to happen. Ashley, we are leaving the TBS women's title match. We're back on course. The crowd's back into it. And we head to the TNT title match. Christian Cage versus Adam Copeland. No DQ. And what a freaking match this was.
Yeah. Kind of not unexpected with the two talents involved, but everybody played their part in this one. You had Nick Wayne, Mama Wayne, and even Killswitch kind of coming in with his part at the end. But crazy tough, crazy match, and a We Want Fire chant that actually paid off.
You know, I was like looking at this girl and going like, don't you know that you just got this match started and you're chanting We Want Fire? I'm like, oh, wait a minute. It's Long Island. This is like New York City. Yeah, they want fire. And you know what? They set the spot up. It's Nick Wayne. He's lining the table with Christian. Christian gets back into the ring. And it looks like it's going to be a spear being missed by Christian to hit Nick into the table. And it doesn't go that way. So here comes Adam Copeland. He's not having one bottle of lighter fluid. No. He douses this table. This table is going to go on fire now for sure.
Yeah, he kept pouring it on and kept pouring it on. Lights it up and then power bomb Nick Wayne in front of Mama Wayne. Not so much through the table. It didn't break. It kind of fell over, but enough to light Nick Wayne's ass on fire for sure.
I'll give credit to Nick for taking this bump. It didn't go exactly as planned. And this table had the mind of its own. It was like, I'm not selling anything. You can light me on fire. I'm not breaking for nobody.
I am the table.
So Nick Wayne's taken care of. Adam Copeland gets back in the ring. And he nails Christian Cage with a kill switch. 1, 2, 3. We have a brand new champion. And the rated R superstar, Adam Copeland. And he celebrates. And like any horror movie you ever seen, Killswitch just stands right behind him like he's Freddy Krueger or Michael Myers. And here comes the murking of Adam Copeland.
Yeah, seemingly to cash in right away. But before he can, Christian inserts himself and demands to be given the contract.
Exactly. We think Killswitch is going to claim this contract for himself. Then Christian runs over like he just found a $1,000 bill lying in the street and he wants to claim it. And he's like, no, I saw this. This is mine. Killswitch, let me have this title shot. And Killswitch kind of hands it over to him. He exits stage right. Christian thinks, like any good heel, I just need to sign my name to this contract, even though it's not my contract. And it works.
It did.
I mean, fair point. It did. And it's interesting because we saw the kill switch with Adam Copeland pinning Christian Cage. Christian Cage uses a spear and 1, 2, 3, a two-time TNT champion and follower of the year, Christian Cage.
Yeah. Overall, what, like, if not the match of the night for some people, it's definitely, I would say, like, top two.
And you know what? It leads to a third and final chapter of this rivalry between Adam Copeland and Christian Cage. And hopefully in 2024, we finally spin back around where these guys are together as a tag team when we get that final tag team run that everybody wants. But I can't wait to the last chapter of this feud right now because it's been one fun ride. And honestly, I was kind of disappointed that Copeland got the victory. I was kind of like, no, Christian should keep this title because he's damn good. And thank you for that title shot there. Yes, please. Thank you.
I'm going to say I was definitely wrong. I didn't know how I was going to feel about Copeland coming in and stuff like that, but I've definitely enjoyed this run.
Okay, so this was probably the biggest hit so far on this pay-per-view until the very next match. It's Eddie Kingston versus Jon Moxley for the AEW Triple Crown title, the end of the Continental Tournament, and they gave us one hell of a match to send this Continental title tournament off for 2023. Ashley, did you enjoy this match?
I loved this match. How can you not? John Moxley is an absolute ace. I've never respected a wrestler, I think, more than I respect John Moxley.
This match was basically a story of they start off being like better rivals, but still, you know, the underlying friendship of these two guys, and even having Brian Danielson on commentary at the start of this match, really pulling for Moxley to beat this bum. And at the end of this night, both gentlemen give Eddie Kingston the proper respect as Eddie Kingston retains his ROH title and gains the Continental Classic title. So now he's a Triple Crown champion. And are we going to see this title defended in 2024, Ashley?
I believe so. I think Eddie's going to be a fighting champion. And I think the possibilities are endless now. I don't know where he's going to be defending them. I don't know how this new belt is going to work, if there's any stipulations or attachments or anything to this belt. I don't know how I feel about the design, though, I'll be honest.
Well, I did hear people saying that it's like basically they threw one into the creator belt design for like 3 minutes and pulled out something. So, and it could use some work.
Yeah, I can see that.
Okay, so we're at the main event. It's MJF versus Samoa Joe for the AEW World Title. And I gotta say, the opening for MJF coming down to the ring was excellent. The video package was very funny. And once Adam Cole's music hit, I didn't think much of it. I think, okay, cool. Then, during the match, MJF battling through his injuries like a babyface, but there's this moment where he crawls over to his best friend. Adam Cole goes, "Adam, I need the ring." And Adam's acting like the worst best man ever. He's looking through all his pockets, going like, "Wait a minute, I have it. I know I have it." And he finally pulls it out, but it's a little too late because Samoa Joe locks in the Cotija clutch. And we get a very interesting ending here because the referee goes over, lifts the arm up one, two times, they drop. And on the third time, I was thinking, oh, MJF is going to lift his arm up and we're going to continue the match. It drops. The referee turns around acting like this wasn't really the finish of the match, but I think he was in shock too. And Samoa Joe beats MJF clean with a submission, and then we finally found out who the devil is. And Ashley, are you surprised who the devil is?
No, but it still breaks my heart.
We got a retarded the double clothesline podcast now because there's no more double clothesline partnership because the devil is Adam Cole, baby. And he revealed his new faction of being the Kingdom, Matt Taven, Matt Bennett, Wardlow, and Roddy Strong. And I don't know what I want to debate about this group because I feel like this group's missing something. Oh, wait a minute. Actually, I know what this group's missing. It's missing Britt Baker. This should have been Britt Baker pulling off the mask as the devil and keeping Adam Cole hidden for just a little bit longer because both these gentlemen are going away for a bit because they're both injured. As it reported that MJF is taking some time off to recover from his injuries. We know about Adam Cole and his ankle. So we leave this kind of like with a pause and a period like to be continued once these two guys get healed up. But I feel like if he had Britt Baker revealed as a devil, she can come out and cut promos and go like, "I'm the one to cost MJF his title because I didn't like that SOB hanging around my boyfriend. So I took care of this issue."
That would have been a swerve. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was like the like out of left field choice. I think it was kind of like the plan from along. But like you said, it's like a weird way to leave it because Adam Cole did this and it didn't directly get him anything. You know, like he didn't win the title. He didn't win anything out of this per se. He just cost MJF his. And I guess that could have been the event. But I mean, now he's still going to have to just go back and heal, you know, and so is MJF. And that dude is banged up. So I'm hoping he just takes all the time he needs and heals up.
Exactly. Because wrestling logic here, I'm thinking about, okay, Adam Cole, you just cost MJF the title, but the title's on Samoa Joe. I feel like this is not working as according to your plan.
Right. I mean, like, is your plan to like now take on Samoa Joe? I don't know which one is worse, you know?
Well, I'll tell you, Ashley, I would rather take on a bang up MJF than a
healthy
50% Samoa Joe, because dude, it's a tank.
Yeah, and another dude that, like, I loved watching him on the scrum, too. Watching him talk, and definitely going to be a new era with MJF with Samoa Joe as the champion going into 2024.
I mean, it opens up a lot of new possibilities of who you can have challenged for this title. And oh, by the way, you might want to check on eBay because Samoa Joe ain't going to have nothing to do with that double B title belt.
Yeah, and he was already making, throwing some names out there like Hangman and Swerve. So let's get one of those going.
Exactly, because we get AEW Revolution in March. I feel like, hey, that's enough time to build up as a babyface and we get this match going. Or, hey, we can visit Hangman Adam Page versus Samoa Joe first.
Either one. I'll take either one right now.
Okay, so we're leaving this pay-per-view, and I asked a question on Rhea Ripley PW Twitter account, and I simply said, after watching AEW World's End, was this worth your money, or did you have buyer's regret? And Ashley, I asked you this question. Which one do you think was the winner of the poll?
Buyer's regret, I said on this one.
And you would be correct, because 62% of those voted on Rhea Ripley PW Twitter's account said they had buyer's regret. And I'm kind of with them because I did make this as a last minute purchase just because I was on vacation and I had time to watch it. Now I was like, especially the ending of that match where I was looking for something that's a little bit more, and just the way it ended so fastly and decisively with Samoa Joe winning. I'm happy with Samoa Joe being the champion, but that ending kind of fell flat to me.
Yeah, I think especially in New York, the big hometown crowd for MJF, not the ending they were expecting. So definitely the crowd was flat for the ending as well.
True. So this may not be AEW's best pay-per-view of the year. We may not list this on the Winston Churchill Awards for 2024 in about 12 months. We'll have a wait and see. So we're going to end our review here, and we're going over to our top five matches of the year, Ashley. And do you want me to start or you want to go first? Okay, so I'm starting at my number five match of the year, and I'm going back to All In. It's Will Ospreay versus Kenny Omega. Some people love the New Japan Wrestling Kingdom match a little bit better, but this is Will Ospreay wrestling in front of his home crowd, defending his New Japan Pro Wrestling UK title against Omega, and he gets the victory. And I'm like, this is the summer of Ospreay because he beat Jericho. He beat Okada. He's just adding victory after victory. And that led him to be my choice for... Actually, it wasn't my choice. It led to David and you both naming him our male wrestler of the year.
Nope, great choice. I actually, I'll be talking about that one in a little bit myself. So,
okay, so what is your number five match of the year?
All right, so my number five is actually... probably one that most people wouldn't remember, but when it was announced, I was very excited because two of these guys are two of my favorite wrestlers, and it's from a February episode of Dynamite, and it was Bryan Danielson taking on Roof. These guys went one-on-one leading up into Bryan Danielson's match at Revolution with MJF, and they had a hell of a match that I've gone back and watched about two or three times since then. Just hard-hitting, and just two of my favorite wrestlers going right now.
You know, that's a great choice. And you're right, I kind of forgot about that match during that section of March and leading into Revolution. But anytime you get Roosh versus the Dragon, I mean, like, it's going to be one hell of a match anyway.
Yeah, I just thought it was great. I just unbelievably hard-hitting. Those two are just insane.
But you led me right into my number four match of the year. I'm going to AEW Revolution. It's for the AEW World title. It's the Iron Man match, MJF versus the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson. And coming into this match, I was thinking, there's no way that MJF can last an hour with the American Dragon. The Dragon's going to drag him into the deep water, and he's going to make him submit over and over and over. And to my shock and my surprise, MJF wins, and he wins with the bell lock after hitting the American Dragon with a fire signature. But he gets a submission victory in the final seconds to go 4-3 and retain his title.
I see we're going to have some overlap on this list.
So what is your number four match of the year?
All right. So number four, I went with probably the most controversial match from Full Gear. Okay, I loved it. Hangman Adam Page taking on Swerve in their Texas Death Match. Just a fantastic storyline. Personal, just brutal rivalry that came to a head at Full Gear. And I love the kind of theme we've had since then, that we're not done quite yet with them. I can't wait to see them go at it again. And just insane what they, the spectacle they put on at Full Gear.
You know, that's a great choice. I can see why you selected this match. I was okay with this match. I just didn't love the ending to this match because I felt like Hangman should have had this victory. Maybe it's just me being a Southern traditional professional wrestling fan where the good guys should win the match after the heel goes into his house and leans over to his son's crib and threatens the kid. I feel like Hangman Adam Page should have had the victory there, but we're just splitting hairs. It was a great match. Okay, so I'm heading to the number three match of the year for me, and it's a match that wasn't scheduled to happen, but it had to happen because Ricky Starks was supposed to face CM Punk for in a scrap match, but instead, due to CM Punk getting fired, we get Ricky Starks versus the American Dragon, defending the honor of Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Because going into this match, Ricky Starks thought he was going to sign a strap match with the Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, but that Steamboat said, there's more than one dragon. And you could see Ricky Starks just crapping his pants when he saw it was going to be him versus the American Dragon, and this match was freaking great.
Yes, I loved this match. That was such a good choice. I'm so mad at myself for not putting this on here.
Yes, if you ain't seen this, you need to go back to see this. This was the best strap match I have ever seen in my life.
So good. And Bryan Danielson wrestling that match with a still healing forearm at the time, so much so that he did not even use the arm during the match.
He basically wrestled this match one-handed.
Every match of the year list is just going to be a Danielson.
You know, I tried my best not to make it a Will Ospreay and Danielson love fest, so I had to put matches on that weren't them. So, what is your number three match of the year, Ash?
So my number three is one you kind of spoke about already, and I did go also with the second Omega and Ospreay match, and I kind of did the same thing. I flip-flopped back and forth, but the second match, what it did for Will Ospreay, just unreal. The crowd getting to sing along with it, with his theme, everything. This is finally getting to beat Kenny Omega, along with the year, like you said, that he's had, finally beating Okada, topping Chris Jericho, just having a hell of a match with Yoda Tsuji this year. What a year he's had. It's unreal. And despite Kenny Omega's injuries and stuff like that, to still go out there and put on a performance like that is, I don't know how he does it.
True. And 2024 is going to be just another great year for Will Ospreay, as he's coming over to AEW full time, and maybe he's going to be wrestling Samoa Joe for that title.
That would be a great match. I'd love to see that.
Okay, so my number two match of the year, I'm going back to one of the early days of Collision, and it's a tag team match. It's the best 2 out of 3 falls, FTR versus Bullet Club Gold, and I remember this was the match that basically gave us our secondary podcast for a while. And Ashley, I'm talking about Bullet Club Gold versus FTR, the 2 out of 3 falls match for the AEW tag team titles. And normally a 2 out of 3 falls match, you know how it goes. One team gets a pin real fast, and the other two, the second fall comes really quick after it. Not this one. This was a masterclass of how you put this match type together.
This was actually my choice as well.
And yes, we had no idea who was going to pick what matches because we didn't talk about it until we recorded.
No, I just, like you said, fantastic. Well, like 58 minutes?
It went 58 minutes and it left the fans chanting 5 more minutes.
Yeah, unreal tag match. FTR, as always, just putting on one of the best tag matches you've ever seen. And it was such a great way for, I feel like, Jay White and Juice Robinson to kind of break out a little better. It felt like they were kind of a little more muddled at first, but like that was like a truly great breakout performance that everybody was, oh, like, oh my God, this match is great. And it was so good. It was almost tag team perfection on it.
It's like everybody discovered Jay White and Juice Robinson. We're looking at them going like, you know they wrestled before this, right?
Yeah, I feel like it has to do sometimes with the way AEW introduces people. It's not always.
Okay, my question for you, was this your number two match of the year?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll go on to my number one match of the year. And in traditional Sean style, I got two matches instead of one. Two. Because you need both to understand the story. You need both. And I'm going over to Progress. It's Carter Law versus Spector Bay. Yes, 1A is their steel cage match, which you need to go see because Tom Gotton's Carter Law wrestles about 20 minutes with three fascias in his foot and puts on one hell of a performance. But I'm going back one chapter. I'm going back to chapter 150 when the man comes around. It's Tom Dawkins not being Kara versus Spector Bay in a no DQ match, and everything is on the line for Tom Dawkins because if Tom Dawkins loses this match, he's out of Progress, never can come back, and Spector Bay comes down to the match dressed as Kara Noir with the face paint and everything, the whole entrance. And during the match, Tom Dawkins rubs the paint off of Spector Bay, and that paint gets onto Tom Dawkins, and he morphs back into Kara. And it's this a great match you need to go out to see.
I'm all for any kind of cage match. So, like, I'm in. I'll check it out.
So, David, there you go. I have a 2-for-1 special Progress at the top of my top matches of 2023. You're welcome. Ashley, what is your number one match of the year?
All right. So, my number one, this my Danielson of my Danielson matches of the year is Revolution. The match with MJF, that match was just unreal. Danielson, to me, this year had like one of the best Iron Man matches I've ever seen. One of the best strap matches I've ever seen. He's just on a fantastic streak. And I feel like when it comes to MJF, there are people on social media who will often say he is only a talker and that's all he has. And then he goes out there and oftentimes has match of the night, and then every time he has a match, I see the same discourse come up again about how he's only a talker, and then he has match of the night again, and this match was like no exception. And the performance he put on out there truly showed why the belt was put on him and why he was picked to carry the company this year.
You know, this was the match that made me shut up and finally recognized that he could actually wrestle. Because, like you said, I was one of those people who were like, yeah, he's good on mic. He's a good heel on the mic. He gets the proper heat. This match showed that he can actually freaking wrestle. And we got to see more of it as we got in for the year. And he flipped over to being the babyface. And honestly, MJF is worth every penny that AEW is paying him.
And then some. I feel like this match, it definitely showed too, like, I know, like, as a heel, MJF often has, like, a lot of, like, shenanigans, like, tied into his matches. And we had some shenanigans in this match as well. But I felt like, bell to bell, like, you'd be hard-pressed to find a better in-ring performance.
True. I mean, there's hardly anything wrong with this match. You would have to sit there with a fine-tooth comb to figure out anything wrong with this match.
So good. And I cannot wait till MJF heals up and gets back and gets to get revenge on his so-called former best friend now.
Well, you know what? Perfect segue into our next segment. This is our 5 bold predictions for 2024. And I'm going to lead off this segment because I kind of hit at this one. My first bold prediction is Okada signing with the WWE after his contract runs out and he debuts at WrestleMania versus AJ Styles and gets a victory over AJ Styles at WrestleMania.
Wow, okay, we're going, like, specifically end old. I had Okada lead.
Hey, I'll swing for the fences here.
Hey, okay. I had Okada leaving Japan. I don't know, I don't know where he'll end up, but I have him leaving New Japan. So, I think that alone, I thought was, like, huge, and you're already, like, pitching storylines and stuff. Hey, if he goes and faces AJ Styles, like, let's go.
You know, this one actually might be more true. Him leaving New Japan might be more real now than ever, as there's a story going around right now that he was one of the factors that led to the change in leadership in New Japan Pro Wrestling in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. The president stepping down and stepping away, and now Hiroshi Tanahashi taking over. Congratulations to Tanahashi on the promotion. I can't wait to kind of see what he's going to say at Wrestle Kingdom. They say he's going to make his first speech and a public appearance as president.
Well, it's going to be a very interesting start to New Japan Pro Wrestling in 2024. And we'll give you guys an update after Wrestle Kingdom. Now, my second bold prediction of 2024 is WWE Monday Night Raw leaving Monday night, leaving the USA Network, going over to FX, and they're going to have it, hopefully, on Tuesday night as they move NXT over to the CW, and that will be on Wednesday night. We finally get Monday Night Raw away from Monday Night Football.
I have Monday Night Raw moving to Wednesday.
Ooh, we get the Wednesday Night Wars. Okay, I'll kind of with, let's go with it, Ashley.
I don't know what network they end up on. I didn't factor that into it. But like you said, that they're obviously leaving the USA, or at least are very interested in leaving USA. I'm not sure how far along they are in talks with anybody. But I have going to Wednesday, like you said, they're going to pick a night where they're not going to compete with certain sports. So you don't want to pick Monday or Thursday because you got NFL on both of those nights during the NFL season. I could see them choosing Wednesday specifically to target kind of like a so-called Wednesday night war with AEW.
That's kind of cool. And I would be down for that to have a revisit of a war between two promotions, because I grew up during the Monday Night War. It was a great time to be a wrestling fan, and we have a repeat of that. That'd be awesome. Now, my number three prediction of 2024 is Swerve Strickland leaving the year as the AEW World Champion.
That was my like second one. Yep. What that guy has done to get over, he is the hottest act going right now in AEW, and it needs to be rewarded sooner rather than later.
Okay, if he doesn't become AEW champion inside the next 365 days, Tony Khan should be put on charges for malpractice.
Absolutely. The passion he kind of spoke with at the press scrum, and just what he's done, his in-ring like showcases have been outstanding. It's definitely understandable why everybody is behind him. And there's some matches I want to see him maybe kind of revisit before he wins the title. So maybe give it a couple more months, but definitely by the end of the year, I want to see him have a nice long reign with that belt.
Yes, he deserves it. And I feel like this past year has put the proof in the pudding that this dude can carry the company on his shoulders. So my next bold prediction of 2024 is Mercedes Moné does not sign with the WWE or AEW. She keeps her independent status and she hops from promotion to promotion for another year.
I had her going to TNA.
You know, there's this rumor that TNA has some money. They're going to go for a big signing. And yes, she would be a big signing for that company. And her former tag team partner is in that company. So I can see that as a possibility. And that still can work within my prediction as she signs a short-term contract and she keeps hopping around promotion to promotion.
That could be true, too. I mean, a lot, especially places like Impact are obviously no strangers to having people kind of come in and have one-off matches or just a few appearances and their talents going off and having appearances elsewhere. So, I mean, I could see it, but like I definitely think like Trinity being there could factor in, and Impact even I would say in like the darker years has always had like a reliable women's division. So there's no shortage of like talent in that women's division and a bunch of new opponents that she could take on there.
Okay. So my fifth bold prediction of 2024 is WB re-upping with AEW and putting the whole collection of AEW onto Max as their streaming service. That's going to be my last bold prediction of 2024. It may not be the boldest prediction, but it seems like the smartest move because I feel like WWE is going to re-up and they're going to double down on their best producing TV show ratings on Wednesday night.
I actually had them adding another show.
Ashley.
I know. Believe me, I am nervous about it as well. I, like you said, WB is cashing in on this, and they, despite there's always like, you know, talks about ratings or whatever, but WB doesn't seem displeased with anything. And in fact, they've talked about possibly investing more. I could see them adding another show. I'm hoping we just go with something like that, like a streaming service or something gets announced. I don't know if AEW could really take on booking another show right now.
Well, if this is another show, I hope to God Tony Khan finally decides, hey, I'm going to start giving up these booking decisions. Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson, you have Collision. Sunday John, you have Rampage. And lighten this load up for Tony Khan, because this dude does not need another hour of TV to program.
That's what I'm saying, especially now. It's Collision to me is like my can't miss show of the week. I feel like the booking on there is very solid, and that at other times it struggles with the other shows. It's kind of hit and miss. And if we had to stretch out thinner, I think it could be a struggle.
Well, that has been your 5 bold predictions here on Ray Free Professional Wrestling for 2024. We'll have to record these and see how this comes out in 365 days. Ashley, before we go, where can we find you on the super information superhighway?
I'm on Twitter. It's @groovy_ash_.
And ladies and gentlemen, you can always follow this show on Twitter @RadioFreePW. Also on Instagram and TikTok underneath the same Radio Free PW banner. Or you can go to www.radiofreepw.com to catch up on the last episode of Radio Free Professional Wrestling. Thank you for making 2023 one of the best years for Radio Free Professional Wrestling. Ashley, thank you for coming on, being my new co-host, taking over the reins from David. We have been so excited to have you along for the ride. And welcome to 2024 and the best year of Radio Free Professional Wrestling yet to be.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. This has truly been really fun.
And until we see you next week on Radio Free Professional Wrestling, remember, this is our groovy and sunny era. Guns freaking up.
Guns up.
Christina here. On behalf of the guys, thanks for listening. Like the show? Do us a favor and share it with a friend. Have a stunning question? Email it to the show at radiofreeprowrestling@gmail.com. Until next time, this has been Radio Free Pro Wrestling. Stay stunningly.